Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gudolf Zinterberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, my guest is Joshua Cohn. He is both a novelist and a literary critic. He does both sublimely well, but this time, in his newest book, The Netanyahus, he's written a comedy. Not just a comedy, but a campus comedy. It's said that when Harold Bloom, the great literary critic, was teaching at Cornell, he was one of maybe the only Jew on the campus. This is what the Ivy League was once like. And he was called upon to be the person who would guide Netanyahu, the father, when he came in search of a job in the history department. So let's begin. In terms of your book, who are the Netanyahus?
Who are the Netanyahus? They really are not the Netanyahus that we're familiar with, I think, or that we want to be familiar with or trying to be familiar with on the news. There's Benzio Netanyahu, who is Benjamin Netanyahu's father, and the father of three boys, actually, Yoni Netanyahu, Bibi Netanyahu, and Ido Netanyahu. Yoni Netanyahu was, of course, that went on to be the hero of Entebbe when an Air France flight was hijacked and Israeli commandos, you know, saved the hostages from Idi Amin's Uganda. Yoni Netanyahu was the one casualty. Bibi, we all know, who just stepped down was ousted as a prime minister of Israel. And Ido Netanyahu was a former radiologist and a current playwright, God save us all. The father was a historian, a kind of a crank, a madman, a person who was right. He was right, but he was right in usually all of the wrong ways, which, of course, I think provides the great opportunity for comedy that I'm trying to take advantage of here. He was an academic who specialized in medievalism, and he had a pretty medieval mind and a pretty medieval sensibility. He grew up, he was born in Warsaw, and he grew up in Palestine, in Mandatory Palestine, and he became a secretary to Vladimir Zev Jabotinsky, who was kind of the founder of the quote-unquote revisionist movement, revisionist Zionism, which were a movement that didn't want to negotiate with the British for a state. They figured you could just take it. And he was this man's secretary, and he was a polemicist, sort of a soft terrorist. And when Jabotinsky was thrown out of Palestine from the British by the British, Benzio Netanyahu was made persona non grata and was forced to pursue his academic career in the States.
I learned when reading Josh's book, whose complete title is The Netanyahus, an account of a minor and ultimately even negligible episode in the history of a very famous family. As I was reading, I learned all sorts of things I didn't know. Golda Meir was not born Golda Meir. She emigrated to Wisconsin from somewhere in Russia, probably near Kiev, and she changed her name to Golda Meir and moved back to Israel. Many of the people that we're exploring in the course of this book have secret lives, barely known lives that were spent in America, and this is the case with the Netanyahu family. How old are the children at the time of this book?
Yoni is 13, Bibi is 10, and I believe Ido is 7.
And they're little boys, and more than that, they're little brats, and their mother is an impossible woman who is capable of demanding anything. And because it's football season and the prototype for Cornell, what is it called in this book?
Corbin College.
At Corbin, the whole hotel is packed.
There's no room at the inn.
There's no room at the inn. And Mrs. Netanyahu is not only capable, she's more than capable of saying, oh, good, then we'll stay with you. We'll stay at your house. And here's where my husband and I will stay. And here's where the three children will stay. It's your study, so what? Netanyahu teaches as a guest. He teaches a class in biblical history and essentially says, as this book says again and again, talking about what it calls the temple of the assumption, how dare you assume, because I'm Jewish, that I know the Bible? As it happens, I do, but how dare you assume it? It's quite a hilarious idea, because if we are thinking of the Netanyahus as we've come to know them in recent Israeli history, as among the most warlike people, well, here they are in their nascence. Here they are at the beginning of that warlike tribal quality that says, well, we want the land, so we'll take it. Yes, Josh?
Yeah, we want the land, we'll take it, and also your daughter should babysit. It was really my hearing this story, or an outline or a version of this story from Harold Bloom when he, you know, was in his final years. And what to Harold was a totally negligible and normal story, you know, it was kind of given to me offhand. Oh, you know, I met the Netanyahus. Yeah, they were children. And for some reason, this anecdote, which really did have the form of a, you know, of a joke, that it stuck with me and it seemed to have some sort of allegorical or otherwise, you know, metonymic force and weight. And also it was just funny. And I tried to honor that spirit and double down on it. I mean, one of these ideas that you're coming out in the winter of 1950, winter of 1960, to this kind of, you know, Western New York snowbound college town. And the idea that you have to, first of all, get a Jewish professor who's not a specialist in medieval history at all to be the sort of tour guide or docent, you know, for this visit. And then this man shows up with his entire family in tow who proceed to kind of trash his house and insult him. And as he leads this man around, or as this man actually leads him around by the nose and then proceeds to insult all of his colleagues, to insult not only the university itself, but insult the very kind of ideals of American academia, I really tried to find something that wasn't just, you know, resonant with contemporary Israeli politics or resonant with contemporary campus politics and identity politics, but frankly, something that was just fun. One of the things that I have felt recently is that when you laugh at something these days, because everything has been made political, you're supposed to kind of then say, am I supposed to laugh at this? Was, you know, should I laugh at this? And so I like this idea of eliciting laughter and then having people say, oh, should I have found that funny?
This book by Joshua Cohen, The Netanyahus, is probably the very funniest book I've read in years. But don't take my word for it. Lovely Colm Toybean says some scenes are funny beyond belief. Both the husband and the wife are visited by their parents, both of whom come from very different kinds of Jewish background. One wealthy, who are complaining about the roughness of the pillowcases and really in mourning that their daughter has chosen to marry, of all the terrible things, an intellectual. And his parents come too. They are more given to being the kind of Jews who yearned, as the song put it, to have a seat by the Eastern Wall. They will not go anywhere on Rosh Hashanah, especially not to a town in mid-state New York that doesn't have a synagogue. I was a child at that very time, and I had a family that belonged to a synagogue. And where, I mean, things were so extreme that the president of the women's club was not allowed to step onto the bima, the stage where the ark is, because women aren't supposed to go there. This is what Jewish life was once like. And Josh has managed to take it several steps up until you're panting with laughter and then saying, as Josh just said, oh, should I be laughing? Is it appropriate to laugh at a dismal past in which women were mistreated, in which Jews were mistreated? How is it that we're laughing? And the answer is because it's funny and tragic at the same time.
America is a place where we are essentially safe enough to appreciate the idea of laughing at that tragedy. I think that one of the things that I wanted to really talk about was America as a kind of magnet and incubator for other countries' craziness. This was, you know, America where we can say and think what we want. You know, it was the only place where Benzio Netanyahu, this hardline revisionist Zionist kind of quasi-terrorist, it's the only place where he can find a job. America is also a place, by the way, that for 2 years was home to Sayyid Qutb, you know, who was one of the leading Islamic theorists and philosophers of the Muslim Brotherhood, who spent, you know, time in a Colorado teacher's college in Greeley, Colorado, yelling about women wearing lipstick and skirts. And it was there that his, you know, Islamist ideology, the, you know, Qutbism, was really developed and then re-exported. So, you know, we are a great hothouse for these deposed or these deferred ideologies of other countries. But of course, you know, this time in America is used to, in a sense, either assimilate to an American middle where suddenly these hardline ideologies aren't as important, or as a real factory for the development of these ideologies for their re-export or reintroduction to the countries of origin, as we see with the Netanyahus. And then it was re-exported to Israel when Benjamin Netanyahu comes back and assumes power twice, armed with his perfect English and his I know how to talk to these people ideologies.
And here we have America as the land of the free and the home of the brave, but consequently, being the home ground for all sorts of incipient violence and tragedy. And so among the things that happen while the Netanyahus are at the home of our narrator, Reuben, he, his wife, and Netanyahu's wife have gone to attend a guest lecture. The three children are at home with Judith, the daughter, and while they're at home, the boys manage to take the occasion, essentially, to rape the daughter. And what I want to say is that this book, by my guest, Joshua Cohen, is in a great, great American tradition. That tradition includes James Thurber. It includes Robert Benchley. It includes S.J. Perelman and dozens upon dozens of comic immigrant novels. These books were located all in the same section of the Dewey Decimal System. Gene Kerr's book, Please Don't Eat the Daisies, was there. And so this is a brilliant writer, Joshua Cohen, providing an entry into the high style of American comedy. The book is The Netanyahus, an account of a minor and ultimately even negligible episode in the history of a very famous family. It's published by the New York Review Editions, New York Review Books, and it makes a very singular appearance there. Am I right, Josh, in understanding that this is one of the very first few books that the New York Review Press is publishing on its own? This is not a reprint. This is a brand new book in its very first edition.
Yes, they've made me a classic already.
Yeah. Well, yes, to me, you've been a classic from the word go, and your works have always been funny. But this, it seems to me, is your attempt. It's imaginable. To write a comic novel about Israel before it's Israel, about Netanyahu when he's a child, and we're witnessing the nuclear state of the state of Israel in the home of a pseudo Harold Bloom. You've reinvented the character completely, who is showing the Netanyahus around the campus of a college very much like Cornell. Of course, as many of us know, Cornell is one of the few major colleges in America to also have a hotel school. And it's implicit that the hotel that can't fit them, no room at the inn, is the hotel on campus at Cornell where students are making the beds and learning how to handle all of the complicated issues of what they're calling hotel science.
I think that one of the things that you sort of mentioned is the idea of this comedy being some confrontation or some encounter, right, between the American and the Israeli side of things. And really what I was trying to do here is to really think about a meeting between a hardline person, a person deeply rooted in their ideology, a zealot, and this kind of new hated position, this new deeply, I think, mistrusted position in American life, which is liberalism. The idea that to be a liberal these days is to be something that is to put yourself up for ridicule, to put yourself up for kind of slander. But I do like this idea of a liberal being someone who in this book invites an ideologue into their home and allows them to, you know, track snow all over their carpet, allows them to eat all the food in their refrigerator, allows them to, you know, soil their linens, allows them, frankly, the quote unquote pleasures of their daughter. Right? Because this is, you know, a liberal is someone who is essentially losing and losing and losing. And in that losing has never totally lost. And I wanted to really dramatize this encounter between these two things, because I actually think it's liberalism's quality of continually losing that has made the liberal the new Schlemiel, the new kind of perfect Jewish comic figure. And I think it was time for the liberal to earn that space in the comedic pantheon. I had grown up with Seinfeld, with Larry David, with all of these kind of, in my opinion, kind of, you know, hilarious and funny, but ultimately, to my mind, thin, light, and unearned comedies. These comedies that don't have access to the depths or deny themselves, I think, access to the depths of real feeling. And I don't mean to set up some dumb opposition between comedic irony and tragic irony. What I'm saying is when I grew up and saw all of these kind of Jewish comedians giving this comedic shrug in the face of tragedy, I couldn't help but think of all the history that it took for that gesture to become the default and get a laugh. You know, people have to be deeply hurt, have to be trampled into the ground for generations, has to have all of their hopes kind of dashed and betrayed in order for that, you know, Larry David or Seinfeld shrug to survive and play for American laughs.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with the brilliant Joshua Cohen about his new book, The Netanyahus, an account of a minor and ultimately even negligible episode in the history of a very famous family. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Joshua Cohen about his new book, The Netanyahus, a wild, genre-bending comedy of blending identity and politics. I think one of the things that we're talking about when we talk about this book is not just liberalism, but what used to be called, almost as one word by the people who said it, liberal humanism. And since we are watching the decline of liberalism into something that cannot be easily praised, humanism has declined even more so. It stands in for what in our time has been called, accurately or not, the death of reading. But it ultimately is the fact that when World War II was over, many, many intellectuals and scholars literally thronged America, particularly New York. They became the teachers at City College. We were being exposed to European intellectualism in escape from the Nazis. It's by and large these visitors who discover American literature and bring it back into print. They get Henry James back on the boards, and more than that, they restore the reputation of the despoiled Herman Melville. Moby Dick was nearly forgotten. The culture of the American English major was being invented. It didn't pre-exist. And what does the poor narrator discover? Everything is so busy being taught that he specializes in the history of American taxation. So we're watching a book that is truly on the verge of asking its Harold Bloom to be something other than Harold Bloom. If you're teaching taxes, you should teach people how to quote unquote do their taxes.
They're asking Benzio Netanyahu to teach biblical Hebrew. And, you know, this is a man who's fundamentally irreligious. And in fact, he has transferred his Judaism or his belief in religion to a religion of a state, right? His new God is the founding of this nascent state. And he turns to Reuben Blum, who's the Harold Bloom figure in the book. And he says, would you be qualified to teach Shakespeare or Chaucer just because you can order a hamburger at a diner? You know, just because you can read the menu or the traffic signs? And yeah, I mean, I think that he has an enormous critique of this loss of this humanist dream. But at the same time, Benzio Netanyahu was always an enemy of the New School Knicks and of the liberal humanists who are coming over from Europe, of the Walter Benjamins of this world. I mean, he was a person who really believed, along with Jabotinsky, that identity should determine ideology. Right? That because you're a Jew, you must believe in and be loyal to the Jewish state. And this was a right-wing idea in the early part of the 20th century, that who you are is essentially race or ethnicity based, and that who and that should determine your politics. And now all of this rhetoric of that era that was held by a far right, whether that's a far right in the Jewish context or far right in an Italian context or far right in a German context, is a lot of the things that you see in American academia when people seek safe spaces, you know, when people want to be with your own, or if, you know, if you're gay, you must have gay politics. If you're black, you must have black politics, right? And so it's interesting to see these things switch from the right to the left. I think that at the time, Benzio Netanyahu was a person who had spent the 40s crisscrossing the United States trying to raise money for Jabotinsky's failed army for the idea of defeating the Nazis and bringing the Jews of Europe to Palestine. And he left, he kind of, during the 40s, the most consequential decade in modern Jewish history, the man is not being exterminated in Europe, and nor is he founding the State of Israel. He's in, like, you know, synagogue groups throughout America, and B'nai B'rit, like, you know, coffee clutches, trying to raise money for a failed cause. And so when the war ends, he has the deaths of 6 million Jews on his conscience, and he understands that liberal humanism was willfully ignorant of the threat and decided to instead negotiate with the British and sit back in their armchairs and pretend to be Marxist critics of culture when their co-religionists were being exterminated. That created his sort of total emergency of ideology and panic, which he passed on to his sons, especially his middle child.
I'm sure many of my listeners are saying, and this is a comedy? And yes, it is, but it's a comedy in a very special circumstance located between the development of the schlemiel and the schlemazel in American culture, American comic culture, and that figure as he witnesses the incipient failures that are about to befall the Jewish state. As a result, Josh Cohn, who has long been considered by me, among others, as one of the most brilliant writers of his generation, has really written a book which, if you are interested in how we come to be in our relationship to Israel now, to have the extreme and vexed attitudes we have, the subject of so much argument and so much, oh, what would you say, misbehavior amongst friends, this is the book to be reading. Once again, it's called The Netanyahus. It's by my guest, Joshua Cohn. It's an account of a minor and ultimately even negligible episode in the history of a very famous family. I've been talking with Joshua Cohn. Thank you for joining me, Josh.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a real pleasure. This is one of the first original books being published by New York Review Books. I recommend it very heartily for those who want to laugh and cry. And this is a singular event when you're reading an accessible comic novel. I felt when I began the book, I don't really know the history of the Netanyahus, and now I'm more aware than ever I was before. The book does not take sides. It establishes the impossibility of dreaming of taking sides. I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are each taping remotely, me in Los Angeles, Josh in New York, so you may hear unusual sounds coming from the backgrounds in our individual apartments. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. It can also be listened to on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. I want to give my special thanks to my beloved collaborators on the Bookworm Show. Those are Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan, and engineer PJ Shahamit pays the kind of attention that we need to make the show coherent enough for you to hear both of us in different sides of the country in the same show talking to one another. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.